Welcome to the World Affairs Council and tonight's program. It is now my pleasure to introduce our distinguished guests. Abbé Benoît Kinaligu works to document and expose abuses by the Lord's Resistance Army and rehabilitate its victims. As head of the Catholic Church's Peace and Justice Commission in Northern Congo, Kinaligu helped create an early warning network to report LRA attacks and movements, as well as set up a rehabilitation center to help those most affected. Kinaligu was one of the main advocates for the adoption in 2010 of the Obama administration's LRA Disarmament and Northern Uganda Recovery Act, and he has become a powerful voice in urging the international community to bring LRA commanders to justice. Ida Sawyer is a Congo researcher and advocate in the Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. Since 2008, she has conducted research across the Congo and in neighboring communities affected by the LRA. Sawyer came to Human Rights Watch from Cairo, where she worked as a freelance journalist, and spent several years in the Great Lakes region in Africa with CARE International and the Charity for Peace Foundation. She holds a master's degree in international affairs and human rights from Columbia University. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming our two guests.
Thanks, Alexa, and many thanks to the World Affairs Council for inviting us this evening. For the past 5 years, I've lived in the Democratic Republic of Congo, documenting horrific human rights abuses across the country and trying to keep track of the alphabet soup of armed groups and their constantly shifting alliances, leadership, and support bases. The one constant is that Congolese civilians suffer the most. As they're displaced from one village to the next to escape the fighting, their villages are burned down, their mothers and sisters are raped, young boys are forced to become fighters, and entire families are massacred together. This year, one of our main focuses has been on a new rebellion in eastern Congo called the M23. The rebellion is led by a man who is wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes and crimes against humanity, General Bosco Ntaganda. We've been documenting Bosco's crimes for over a decade as he's moved from one armed group to another, committing the same types of abuses wherever he goes, including forced recruitment of children, mass rapes, and ethnic massacres. In 2009, Bosco was integrated into the Congolese army with members of his former rebel group, the CNDP. There, he continued to target civilians and commanded a parallel army within the army. Then in late March of this year, Bosco defected from the army with many of the fighters from his previous rebel group. His new rebellion now controls a significant chunk of eastern Congo's Rutshuru territory, right on the border with Rwanda and Uganda. The M23 quickly set up a parallel government which rules through terror and fear, with the rebels responsible for widespread war crimes. Our job is to document these abuses, something which isn't easy when the M23 particularly targets human rights activists, journalists, and anyone who dares to speak out against the abuses. Last month, a Congolese human rights activist from a local NGO named Evelyn, it's not her real name, was going to a town called Bunagana to investigate allegations of a mass rape of 22 women and girls. The night before she left her home in Rutshuru, 8 M23 fighters came to her house, forced the door open, shouting out for Evelyn. When they found her, they dragged her out of the house and told her, "We are first going to rape you, then kill you. You are accusing us of raping and killing. We're going to do the same thing to you, so you can witness it as well." Then they pulled her into the forest behind her house and started tearing off her clothes. Evelyn was terrified but thought of a way she could maybe get away. She told them, "Let me take my pants off to make this easier for you." Then she pulled back a bit, and as they loosened their grip, she started running. The M23 fighters shot her in the leg as she fled, but they didn't come after her. Evelyn soon made it to our office in Goma, the main town in eastern Congo, just west of the M23's area of control. We helped her get urgent medical care, but once she left the hospital, she had nowhere to go but to hide in our office because she was scared the M23 infiltrators in Goma would find her. We're now helping her find a safe way to get out of Congo. Because of stories like this, the biggest challenge for us is often finding a way to interview victims and witnesses without putting them in even more danger. When we go to areas under the M23's control, we're closely followed, and people who speak to us could be threatened or worse. So we often need to find ways to bring people outside of M23-controlled areas to talk to us. In addition to documenting the abuses, a big part of our job is trying to figure out who's responsible, who gives the orders, and where they get their support. With the M23, we found that the entire rebellion has been orchestrated and supported by senior Rwandan army and government officials, the same individuals who have backed numerous previous rebellions in eastern Congo in order to maintain their sphere of influence and control over eastern Congo's vast mineral resources and other riches. This time, the support from Rwandan officials to the M23 rebellion ranges from the orders given to Bosco Ntaganda and his henchmen to defect, to the rebellion's military strategy and planning, the appointment of the M23's political leadership, a supply of weapons and ammunition, and the deployment of at least several hundred Rwandan army troops into Congolese territory to fight alongside the M23. Rwandan officials also forcibly recruited at least 600 people in Rwanda and escorted them across the border into Congo, where they were trained to become fighters for the M23 rebellion. We were able to make these conclusions after dozens of interviews with former M23 fighters who defected or were captured, Rwandans who were recruited by force but later managed to escape, civilian witnesses who saw the Rwandan army troop movements, and some current M23 fighters. Then we used this information that we got from all of these interviews to show United States government officials and others how senior Rwandan leaders could also be complicit in war crimes committed by the M23, and that they also should be held accountable and sanctioned, and that a solution to the current crisis with the M23 will only be found when Rwanda stops backing the rebellion. We've made some progress on this with the United States and several European countries cutting or suspending some parts of their military and other assistance to Rwanda. This is important, especially considering the fact that nearly half of Rwanda's budget comes from foreign assistance. Yet so far, the cuts have largely been symbolic, and on the ground, the abuses continue, and the M23 is currently seeking to expand its area of control west into Masisi territory. What I'm working on now is another aspect of the M23 rebellion in eastern Congo, which is what's happening in the other parts of North and South Kivu provinces. With the Congolese army focusing its efforts on containing or pushing back the M23, they've left a security vacuum in huge parts of eastern Congo, allowing other armed militia groups to grow and flourish. Some of these groups are supported by Rwandan or M23 officials in an attempt to build a broader alliance against Congo's central government in Kinshasa, or just to wreak havoc and create a humanitarian disaster. These groups have been responsible for scores of ethnically based tit-for-tat attacks over the past year. Local human rights groups have recorded the killings of over 1,000 civilians, mostly women and children hacked to death by machete, and the burning of nearly as many homes. Last week, I was in a town called Rubaya in southern Masisi, and there I met a 12-year-old boy named Ernest, not his real name, and his story has been haunting me ever since I met him. Several weeks earlier, his village had been attacked by one of the most brutal local militia groups called the Rai Mutumboki, which means people in revolt in Swahili. The combatants entered his village dressed in traditional raffia skirts and bear tops, beating on drums and shouting out that ethnic Hutu civilians needed to leave the village. Ernest and his family, who are Hutu, quickly fled and hid in a thicket of reeds on the outskirts of the village. They thought they were safe, but the Rai combatants found them there, surrounded them, and quickly proceeded to hack them to death with machetes and spears. They were all killed except Ernest. He had been carrying his baby niece on his back, and when the Rai killed her, Ernest was covered in her blood, and the combatants assumed that he was dead too. As Ernest finished describing what happened, he spoke in a soft voice, stared at the corner of the ceiling, fidgeting his hands, and told me the names of those he had lost that day: his mother, his father, his four brothers and sisters, his aunt, his uncle, and four little cousins. After the attack, 12-year-old Ernest made it on his own to a displacement camp in a neighboring village several kilometers away. He told me what he wanted most was to find someone from his extended family who he could live with and to be able to go back to school. We sent word out in the camp, and the next day, Ernest was reunited with his grandfather. He assured me he would work to find a way for Ernest to go back to school. This type of unimaginable, senseless brutality that Ernest's family suffered is something I'd only heard about when documenting attacks by another rebel group in Congo, Joseph Kony's LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army. I will now turn this over to Abbe Benoit Kinalegu, who will speak about the LRA. He is a hero in the struggle to expose the LRA's atrocities, rehabilitate its victims, and allow communities to report when the LRA is nearby. Abbe Benoit has dared to speak out against the LRA's abuses when no one else had the courage to do so, and he's been the driving force in efforts to get the United States government to act to help stop Kony. He's also a dear friend, and the work that Human Rights Watch has done for the past several years on the LRA would not have been possible without his support, good judgment, and guidance. Thank you.
Mesdemoiselles, mesdames et messieurs,
ladies and gentlemen,
l'avant-dernière attaque remonte au 24 octobre dernier.
The last attack in a remote area was le 4 octobre.
Le 24 octobre.
The 24th of October last.
Et il y a juste cela trois semaines.
That's about 3 weeks ago.
Et c'était dans le village de Passy.
In the village of Passy.
Dans le nord du Congo.
That's in the north of the Congo.
La dernière attaque remonte à hier.
The last attack took place yesterday.
Dans le village de Nambia.
In the village of Nambia.
Au nord-est du Congo.
In the northeast of the Congo.
Et là, à Passy, le village de Passy a été complètement pillé par la LRA.
And the village of Passy was completely pillaged by the LRA.
Une vingtaine de personnes ont été enlevées pour quelques jours.
About 20 people were kidnapped, were abducted for about 20 days.
Et une jeune fille a été malheureusement kidnappée.
And one of them was a young girl who was kidnapped.
J'ai bien peur qu'on ne la voit plus jamais.
And I'm afraid that we may never see her again.
Voilà une des dernières exactions de l'armée du résistance du Seigneur.
That is one of the last of the most serious abuses of the Lord's army.
La LRA.
The LRA.
Qui
Lord's
depuis
Resistance
plus de 25
army.
Ans.
Qui
depuis plus de 25 ans terrorise nos pays de
Who
l'Afrique
has been
centrale.
Terrorizing our Central African country for the last 5 years. 25 years, thank you.
Actuellement, la LRA n'a plus aucun but politique.
At the present time, the LRA has absolutely no political objective.
Leur seul objectif semble d'être de tuer et de mutiler sans raison.
Their only objective seems to be to kill and to mutilate without any reason whatsoever.
Ils enlèvent et kidnappent les enfants pour les transformer en enfants soldats ou...
They kidnap and they abduct children for the sole purpose of turning them into child soldiers.
Ou en esclaves sexuels.
Or into sexual slaves.
Ils détruisent les écoles.
They destroy the schools.
Les hôpitaux.
Hospitals.
Les marchés.
The markets.
Ils violent les femmes et surtout les petites filles.
They rape women and especially young girls.
Leur acte de barbarie entraîne des conséquences humanitaires indescriptibles.
Their acts of barbarity have indescribable consequences.
Le déplacement massif des populations.
Of course, massive displacement of the population.
Le manque d'abri.
The lack of shelter.
L'insécurité alimentaire.
Insecurity on a human level.
Le non-accès des enfants à l'éducation.
And a lack of access by the children to any education.
Le faible accès des personnes aux soins médicaux.
The lack of access to any kind of medical assistance.
Et l'augmentation du taux de mortalité.
And of course an increase in the mortality rate.
Face à cette crise et à la misère de mes populations,
Because of this crisis and the misery of the local populations,
je ne suis pas resté passif.
I could not remain passive face of this.
Je me suis mobilisé.
I had to mobilize.
J'ai mis en valeur toutes mes énergies pour soulager tant soit peu la souffrance de mes frères et sœurs de la région.
So I have tried to use all of my energies in every way possible to help and to sustain and assist all of the people in my area.
J'ai commencé à documenter et à dénoncer les exactions de ces criminels depuis l'année 2007.
As of 2007, I have started and then I continued to document as much as possible all of the crimes committed by these various groups.
Et raconter au monde entier qu'il y a au cœur de l'Afrique centrale une grande urgence humanitaire.
And tell the whole world about the fact that there is a great humanitarian need in Central Africa.
Et c'est ce qui m'a amené le mois de juin dernier.
And that has led me since last June.
À faire un lobbying au Congrès américain à Washington.
To lobby the American Congress in Washington.
Et au Conseil de sécurité à New York.
At the Security Council in New York.
Pour bien documenter les faits.
In order to document the effect,
j'ai contribué à l'installation d'un réseau d'alerte précoce.
I was able to contribute to the establishment of an early warning system.
Ce sont des radiophonies qui aident les villageois à s'avertir les uns les autres.
And this is a two-way radio system which allowed the villagers to warn each other of impending danger.
Afin de se protéger contre les éventuelles attaques de la LRA.
And to try to protect themselves and flee from any of the attacks by the LRA.
Ce réseau permet également aux populations bénéficiaires d'être au courant de ce qui se passe dans les localités voisines.
And this is also very helpful because the network allows all of the villagers and the various people in the area to be informed about what is happening or what might happen.
Et à mon niveau, cela me permet de faire un monitoring assez régulier sur les exactions de la LRA.
And that allows me to keep fairly regular, to monitor fairly regularly the activities of the LRA in the area.
Deuxième volet de mon engagement, sont sur les enfants qui parviennent à s'échapper de l'emprise de la LRA.
And I'm particularly involved with the children who have been able to escape from the clutches of the LRA.
Ce sont des enfants qui ont un grand besoin d'aide.
These children have need of great deal of assistance.
Car pour la plupart des cas, ce sont des orphelins qui ne savent plus comment survivre.
Because most of the cases are orphans who really don't know how to survive.
Surtout les filles qui ont été violées et rendues enceintes par les militaires de Joseph Kony.
Especially the young girls who have been raped and then become pregnant by these soldiers, part of the LRA army.
C'est pour cette raison que j'ai créé un centre de réhabilitation et de réinsertion psychosociale.
And that's why I have created a center of rehabilitation and psychological assistance in my area.
Et ce centre offre à ses enfants le soutien psychologique.
And this center offers the children some kind of psychological support.
Médical.
As well as medical.
Matériel.
Material support.
Et donne aussi une formation professionnelle qui va leur donner une nouvelle chance dans la vie.
And it also gives them some kind of professional training in order to allow them a better chance in life.
En cette période de graves violations des droits humains dans notre région,
during this period of serious violation of human rights in our area,
les femmes sont les victimes les plus vulnérables.
The most vulnerable victims are women.
C'est ce qui m'a poussé à créer au sein de mon organisation.
And that's why, within my organization,
une cellule qui s'occupe des femmes.
I have created a particular part that deals with women.
Et cette cellule s'appelle la Dynamique Femmes pour la Paix.
And this particular group is called Dynamic Women for Peace.
C'est une cellule qui apprend aux femmes à lire.
And this group or cell teaches women how they can learn to read.
Documente les attaques dont elles sont victimes.
And also documents the attacks they have been victim of.
Et leur donne des outils pour devenir autonomes.
And also gives them tools so that they can become independent.
Comme vous pouvez le constater,
as you can see,
ce sont des initiatives louables.
These are laudable initiatives.
Mais elles demandent du temps.
But they all take time.
De l'énergie et des moyens financiers.
takes time, energy, and financial help.
And all of this is never
enough and never quite sufficient to be able to answer the needs in that area.
C'est pourquoi je n'ai cessé de circuler partout pour faire le lobbying afin que Joseph Kony soit arrêté.
And that's why I have not stopped, and I continue to go around lobbying and asking for help so that we can finally bring an end to the terror of Joseph Kony.
Et qui répondent de ses actes devant la justice internationale.
And so that he will be answerable for his terrible crimes in front of international justice.
Je vous remercie pour votre aimable écoute.
I thank you for listening so graciously to me.
Thank you both for those remarks. We will now begin the Q&A portion of this evening's program. If you have any questions, please write them down and pass them to the council staff, and they will go ahead and pass those questions forward. While we're waiting for some additional questions, I was wondering if we could start with a question about accountability. Obviously, there's quite a bit that needs to be done to rehabilitate the victims of such horrific crimes. Also, I'm sure many other people besides myself are wondering, why are men like Joseph Kony or Bosco Ntaganda not yet in some form of captivity? The U.S. has obviously spoken out quite vocally about wanting to get Kony in particular either captured or killed, and yet that hasn't happened. What are some of the reasons why not?
I'll start, and then Abby Benoit can add. I think looking at the cases of Bosco Ntaganda and Joseph Kony and the other LRA leaders wanted by the ICC, there are a variety of reasons. One, with the LRA leaders, it's hard to catch them, and they're operating in an area that's extremely remote. It's inaccessible by road, and they hide out in these remote corners of countries that it's hard to find them there. But it's also, is there really the political will to go out and capture them? That's, a big question. That seems that it might be lacking. And that's definitely been the case with Bosco Ntaganda, who, has moved from rebel group to rebel group, but then for 3 years he was in the Congolese army. He was living in Goma, the main town in eastern Congo, in plain view of the diplomats, the UN peacekeepers based in Goma, at all the top restaurants, playing tennis in the nice hotels of Goma, and no one was arresting him despite the international arrest warrant from the ICC. And that's because Kabila, the president, didn't want to arrest him. He thought he was necessary for the peace process, and no one from the international community was willing to go against that. Now this is the situation has changed, and now that Bosco started a new rebellion, Kabila says that he does want to arrest him, but he can't get him, and Kabila's being protected by the neighboring country, Rwanda, and the international community is all calling for him to be arrested, but no one is physically going out to do that. The Congolese government can't arrest him. UN peacekeepers don't want to take the risk. So he's still at large.
Thank you.
De Joseph Kony dépend beaucoup.
The arrest of Joseph Kony.
Des facteurs militaires, bien sûr.
Is not only a question of military ability,
ma collègue Ida venait de le dire,
but as Ida just said,
ce sont des zones les plus reculées et géographiquement très grands.
And because they're in an area where they have withdrawn in areas that are very distant and difficult to reach.
Et avec une végétation très difficile.
Large areas with heavy vegetation.
Cela exige beaucoup d'études militaires.
And that requires a great deal of military strategy and study.
Et une réelle volonté aussi de combattre, de faire pression jusqu'à arrêter Joseph Kony.
And a real will to want to go after him, to keep after Joseph Kony until he's captured.
Nous espérons que avec la mise en œuvre de la nouvelle stratégie de l'Union africaine.
We hope that with the new strategy of the African Union,
sous la direction des conseillers américains,
with the help of American advisors who were in the area.
Et aussi avec l'appui de la communauté internationale, nous espérons que.
And with the support of the international community, what we are hoping is.
Ils peuvent fournir de bons résultats l'armée de l'Union africaine.
That the African Union Army will be able to have more successful results.
Tandis qu'il y a les facteurs politiques.
But there's also the political factor.
Il faut que les chefs d'État reconnaissent ces fléaux dans leurs pays respectifs.
The heads of state in the respective countries need to acknowledge that these crimes are taking place.
Or, pour des intérêts, je ne sais pas quel type d'intérêt politique, il y en a qui ne reconnaissent pas l'existence ou l'ampleur de cette atrocité.
And we don't know if it's because of only political interests or other interests, but they are not always willing to recognize the extent of the problem.
Tout simplement parce que la zone où opère Joseph Kony,
because of the area where Joseph Kony is operating,
est loin des gouvernements centraux des pays de la région.
Is always in areas that are outlying and far away from any central governments of the area.
Et pour ce faire, ne constitue pas une menace pour les pouvoirs centraux de notre région, des pays de notre région.
And so therefore, they don't consider that he's a direct menace to them, and they've kind of let it slide as a result.
Ça, c'est un autre facteur. Il faudrait que nos gouvernements arrivent à accepter et à reconnaître l'existence de cette rébellion.
And so that's another factor. I mean, it's really important that our governments accept the fact that this Kony is creating such mayhem and take action.
Je crois qu'il y a d'autres facteurs d'ordre diplomatique et que nous ne pouvons pas continuer à présenter ici.
And some of these may be diplomatic factors that I can't go into in depth right here now.
So as a follow-up, because many of the questions that I've been handed really do deal with this issue of accountability, what would it take to really ensure some form of accountability in a way that's more effective? Is it going to take training? Is it going to take funding? Is it going to take more diplomatic and political pressure? What is needed here to see both local governments act, regional organizations come together to make sure this happens, and also from the international community?
Taking the case of the LRA, right now we do have the African Union-led initiative, which is basically the Ugandan army, the South Sudanese army, the Congolese army, and the Central African Republic army on the ground carrying out operations against the LRA with 100 U.S. special forces as military advisors deployed in the region. In reality, it's mostly the Ugandan army which is carrying out offensive operations to try to track down the LRA. The U.S. special advisors they stay in their main camps in the towns in Central African Republic, and they advise the Ugandan army, but they aren't going out on operation with them. And I think from what we've seen, one thing that seems to be lacking is using the intelligence that is gathered from defectors who come out or from satellite images from planes, and really using that intelligence and then carrying out an operation and arrest strategy to go after the leaders. And right now it's mostly sending units out, wandering around the forest, hoping they get lucky. So I think there's much more that could be done in terms of better intelligence gathering and then acting effectively on that intelligence. And then there's also a question, so far, what we've depended on the Ugandan army to carry out these operations, and the Ugandan army has been going after the LRA for 25 years, and they haven't been successful, so maybe we need a solution that does not depend on the Ugandan army.
Did you have anything that you would like to add?
Je pense que ma collègue a presque répondu à la question.
I believe my colleague has basically covered and answered the question.
Okay. We also have some questions about the potential human rights abuses that may have been committed by the Congolese military or police. Would you mind speaking a little bit to the relationship of Congolese military police or government, social, civil society sector police to the violations that may have occurred?
Yes, so we've over the years, we've documented many horrific human rights abuses committed by Congolese military and police, and that's, you know, in eastern Congo, in the capital, Kinshasa. Just a year ago, Congo had its national elections, and around that period, after the former president, who was President Kabila, who was reelected, the main opposition candidate contested the results. Etienne Tshisekedi claimed that he had won. There was a lot of protesting, and Kabila, the president, cracked down with his personal security guard and other members of the Congolese army. Dozens of people were killed in the streets of Kinshasa, and there were attacks in other parts of the provinces. So that's just, you know, one example. We've documented in eastern Congo horrific abuses against civilians, and that's definitely a big challenge. Security sector reform is a massive challenge for Congo. It's been on the table for years, but we haven't really gotten a program in place that's effective or lasting. Lots of problems with soldiers not getting paid, not getting food rations, not having a place, know, where they live when they're deployed on operations, and then, you know, commanders, the senior army officers, taking the money, using their jobs to get control over mineral resources, not necessarily following the orders from the top, parallel chains of command. There are a whole host of problems. Thank you.
Le problème de l'armée congolaise et de la police congolaise.
The problem of the Congolese police and the Congo army.
Il faut reconnaître que il y a beaucoup de violations de droits humains en RDC.
We do have to recognize that there are great many violations of human rights by them.
Par ses agents.
By their agents.
Et nous devons reconnaître aussi que cela est dû. Leur formation.
And that's also caused by their training.
Ils n'ont pas une formation classique.
They don't have a regular classical training.
Et surtout en matière de la protection des civils.
And especially in the matter of protecting civilians.
À cela s'ajoute les problèmes, comme disait Ida, les problèmes de leurs soldes et leurs rations.
And this also involves the problem of their rations and their ability to survive. It's not insured. It's not certain.
Et à ce moment-là, la population devient l'employeur des policiers et des militaires.
And so then at that point, it's the civilian population that becomes the employer of the police or of the army.
Vous comprenez que ce paiement des militaires doit se faire au bout des canaux
and
par
so
la
then,
population.
Then, unfortunately, it's the civil population that pays because they find some way to try to get payment from the civilian population.
C'est un problème sérieux dans notre pays.
It's a very serious problem in our country.
Just maybe to add one other thing, I think it's the system in Congo has largely been that rebel groups, the way that the Congolese government has dealt with rebel groups is to integrate them into the army, and usually there's complete impunity. So these commanders who committed horrific abuses against the population as leaders of rebel groups then come into the army, and that sends a signal to other, you know, guys in the villages who might want to start their own rebel group that the way to get money and positions and power and wealth is to commit horrific abuses against the population, and then you get rewarded instead of being brought to justice.
So clearly the problems are quite numerous. If Kony or Bosco Ntaganda or others were to be brought to accountability or to some form of justice, what would it take to really restore a sense of peace to a community that's been so racked by violence for such a long period of time, where presumably so many people are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and other major traumas from their life's experience?
Et je pense actuellement la pression que la communauté internationale est en train d'exercer.
I think that the pressure that's being put on them by the international community.
sur le gouvernement et les pays impliqués dans la rébellion M23.
By governments and by the et par qui? Par les 1, 2, 3, vous savez.
Non. Par les pays impliqués dans la rébellion
M23. By the countries that are involved in these kinds of rebellions.
C'est une voie, d'après nous, qui semble être la plus sûre pour arriver à arrêter Bosco Ntaganda.
I think that's the voice that will help the most the international community to put pressure.
Et il va falloir avant tout affaiblir.
So above all, we need to weaken
la chaîne de ravitaillement de cette rébellion.
The chain of command of these rebels.
C'est-à-dire en affaiblissant les appuis.
So that we weaken the support that they receive,
aux pays qui les soutiennent,
and especially from the countries that are now supporting them.
Et faisant aussi pression sur notre gouvernement afin qu'il puisse arrêter Joseph Bosco Ntaganda.
And so that and putting pressure on our own government in order to stop the crimes committed by Bosco.
C'est une question sur laquelle Ida a beaucoup travaillé. Je pense que
Ida has worked
compléter ma réponse.
Great deal on this problem, and I believe that she has put into very concrete terms what needs to be done.
Well, not sure about that, but I think looking at the LRA, I think this is an armed group where if we are able to capture Kony, I think it will be that's not the only solution, but it will be significantly easier to encourage the rest of the combatants to defect. And the LRA is almost all made up of people who were abducted by force and did not join the LRA voluntarily. So if we can capture the top leadership, I think we can, you know, we need to continue the demobilization efforts, but it would be relatively, you know, be possible to end the movement. But then there are huge needs in terms of rehabilitating the children who've been abducted by the LRA and, you know, helping them go back to their communities and restart normal lives. The, you know, humanitarian consequences need to, you know, rebuild schools and hospitals and all of that. So that those needs will continue.
As a follow-up to that, obviously the International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant and tried to have some form of accountability ultimately prevail. Now, obviously the court can only, if anyone is captured, can only adjudicate the cases of very top leaders. But clearly there are others who may be implicated in this as well. Is there a system in Congo or elsewhere in the region that could potentially take in some of these mid- to high-level individuals whom the court will never see?
Currently, there's no system in place, but this is something that we, along with a number of Congolese civil society organizations, have been working hard on. And that's to establish a specialized mixed court. So that would be a court within the Congolese judicial system to try the most serious international crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, crimes of genocide committed in Congo since 1990 up to current times. And this is a proposal that's been on the table since 2004, proposed by Congolese civil society organizations. It was later a recommendation in the United Nations mapping report, which mapped out the most serious crimes committed in Congo between 1993 and 2003. And then last year, there was some success. The Congolese Minister of Justice supported the establishment of this court and drafted a legislation which was presented to Parliament, and it was then rejected by the Senate. But this year, we're trying to move forward with it again. And there does seem to be, we've gotten positive indications from President Kabila and other senior members of the government that, especially in light of the current crisis with the M23, they do want a new judicial mechanism. So we're hoping that we can move forward with that.
Thank you.
Oui, la possibilité d'un tribunal spécial sous-régional.
The possibility of being binational and regional at the same time.
Où tous les pays qui ont été affectés par ce phénomène de la LRA.
Where all of the countries who've been affected by the LRA phenomenon.
Peuvent s'y retrouver.
May come together.
C'est une possibilité à encourager et que.
That's a possibility that should be encouraged.
Et qu'effectivement, nous nous sommes en train d'étudier.
And that undoubtedly is continuing to be studied.
Une proposition à soumettre aux échéances qu'il faut pour cette question.
And also because we want to submit it to the appropriate agencies to try to implement such a system.
Je crois que ce serait une structure régionale adaptée.
I believe it would be some kind of regional structure that would need to be adopted.
Pour les commandants contre qui le mandat d'arrêt international n'a pas été lancé.
For the various either commanders or various participants, soldiers in these armies, where there has been no international arrest warrant issued.
Ils ont commis des crimes horribles, peut-être qui ne sont pas encore exposés.
They have committed some of the most horrendous, horrible crimes that have not yet been exposed or come to light.
Bon, qu'on remet tout sur le dos de Joseph Kony et ses hauts commandants, mais eux aussi, ils ont fait commis beaucoup de crimes dans la région.
So it's true. We definitely know about Joseph Kony and his commanders or henchmen, but there are many other members of other groups who have also perpetrated horrendous crimes.
There are several questions here about the origins of the violence and wanting to know a little bit more about how this came about in the first place. Obviously, in order to make sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen again, what were the origins of the violence, and is it possible that that would recur?
Starting with the LRA, so the Lord's Resistance Army began in northern Uganda, and it was the Acholi ethnic group who was fighting against the central President Museveni's central government in Uganda. And at first, there were a number of Acholi rebellions before the Lord's Resistance Army. And when Joseph Kony came about, he started this rebellion again, fighting the central government, fighting for Acholi rights within the central government, but then turned against his own people, the Acholi population, in an effort to, what they said, to cleanse the Acholi population. So then started abducting children and committing horrific attacks against the Acholi people themselves. So that's how the LRA began in northern Uganda. When they were pushed out of Uganda, they went into South Sudan and eventually into Congo and Central African Republic, and there really lost any political objective and are just trying to survive. Looking at the groups in eastern Congo, there are a lot of, I don't think we have time now to go into the origins of all the different armed groups, but a lot of it goes back to control over land and control over resources, and there is definitely an ethnic dimension which generally goes back to control over land. So I think any long-term solution to all of the different armed groups that have flourished in eastern Congo over the years, we need to figure out how to deal with the control, the land conflicts and control over all of this disputed territory, and where the refugees who now live in Rwanda, when they come back to Congo, where will they go? All of the displaced people in Congo, when they go home, where will they go? And how do you deal with these land conflicts in an equitable or as equitable as possible way, in order to not have one side want to go up in arms?
Pour revenir sur le cas de la LRA,
to come back to the case of the LRA,
outre le fait que ce sont les réactions de frustration de la part de Joseph Kony.
Apart from the fact that Joseph Kony's reactions are instigated or caused partially by frustration,
il est important de considérer que la LRA est un mercenariat disponible dans la région.
You have to remember that the Joseph Kony army were sort of independent mercenaries that were available in the region.
N'importe quel chef de guerre,
didn't matter who the warlord was,
peut demander la disponibilité de la LRA va accepter.
So they would say, well, we need help with this, and the LRA would answer the call, whatever the fighting was.
La LRA offre son service à tous ceux qui peuvent le solliciter pour déstabiliser la sous-région.
And the LRI offers its services for any reason whatsoever to anybody who is trying to destabilize the region.
Et outre cela, la nature des exactions de la LRA témoigne que...
And apart from that, the nature of the exactions, or rather the abuses, the horrendous abuses perpetrated by them.
C'est un terrorisme régional.
This is a regional terrorism.
Et lorsqu'on réfléchit en profondeur,
and when you stop to think about this on a very profound level,
on se rend compte que c'était une rébellion qui était nationale.
You understand that it was a rebellion that was first of all national.
Qui est devenue transfrontalière.
And then became transborder.
Et devient encore régionale.
And then it comes back to being regional again.
Et qu'est-ce qui empêcherait que ça devienne continental et international?
And what's to stop it from becoming international as far as conflict is concerned?
Je crois que nous devons la communauté internationale doit prendre cette question avec beaucoup de pinces.
And I think that the international community really needs to deal with this problem.
Thank you. So obviously conflicts like this take quite a bit of funding. What are the funding streams, and are those streams that can be cut off at some point or in some manner?
Taking the case of the M23 rebellion, we do have very strong evidence that rebellion is being backed financially and otherwise by senior military officials in the Rwandan army. And yes, that can be stopped. I think that we will only get there if there's serious pressure on the Rwandan government from the United States, from the UK, other European important donor countries. And you know, as I said earlier, that started a bit, but so far it's not enough to stop their support for the rebellion. Maybe with the LRA, I'll let Abbé Benoit respond.
Je pense que l'Abbé Benoit va répondre aussi.
Actuellement, nous n'avons pas de preuves.
At the present time, we don't have the proof.
Sur la chaîne de ravitaillement de la LRA.
With the as far as who is feeding funds to the LRA.
Ce que nous savons, c'est qu'ils ont des petits fusils, mais
we know that they have small arms.
Mais tu plus par les gourdins, les machettes et les autres armes.
But they
blanches.
Use other kinds of means to kill people. Hacking with machetes and even heavy wooden sticks and such primitive means of horrible deaths.
Et pour survivre sur le plan de la restauration, ils pillent la population.
So, and in order to survive and to continue to restore their own armies,
ils pillent sur la population.
They pillage the local populations.
Et ils vivent aussi de la faune dans les forêts là où ils vivent.
And they also are able to survive in the forests
là où ils se cachent.
Where they, for instance, hide, and then they create their little shelters there.
Bon, actuellement, il y a des hypothèses comme quoi ils seraient soutenus par le gouvernement du Soudan du Nord.
There is some hypothesis that the government of North Sudan is giving them help.
Mais nous n'avons pas encore d'éléments de preuve pour confirmer ces hypothèses.
But we don't have the total proof that this is so, even though we suspect it.
Mais ce sont des hypothèses probables.
But it's very probable that government is backing them.
Compte tenu de certains paramètres.
Within certain parameters.
C'est possible que le gouvernement du Nord utilise ces mercenariats-là.
It's possible that the governments of the North are using those mercenaries
pour déstabiliser le Soudan du Sud.
In order to destabilize southern Sudan.
Et les autres pays voisins.
And the other neighboring countries.
Bon, ce sont des probabilités. En tout cas, nous n'avons pas d'éléments de preuve.
This is very probable. We just don't have all the proof yet.
Just to add to that, the reports we've been getting, again, not confirmed, but credible reports for the past several months, are that is that Kony is in North Darfur, in the area controlled by the government in Khartoum, and possibly moving back and forth between Central African Republic and this part of Darfur, and that he might have gotten some sort of support from the Khartoum government recently. But that in the past, the LRA has gotten a lot of support from the Khartoum government. We haven't had hard proof of that more recently, but it is possible that it's happening now.
So moving back a bit farther from the African continent, there are several questions here that ask about the Western countries, such as the United States and the United Kingdom, and their potential political and financial will and contributions to the region. One question talks about last week's announcement that the United Kingdom has made a decision to provide Rwanda with considerable development aid package. To what extent does that kind of funding support undermine the work that you're trying to do to make sure that there's not funding for these kinds of crimes?
So looking at the specific case of the UK funding to Rwanda, in June of this year, we first put out a report about Rwandan support to the M23 rebellion, and then soon after that, the United Nations group of experts put out detailed findings in their interim report. Again, dozens of pages of detail about Rwandan support to the M23. Following that, the publication of that report, the U.S. cut some of their military assistance to Rwanda, and the U.K. announced that they were suspending a significant chunk of their assistance to Rwanda because of the findings in this report. But then Andrew Mitchell, on his last day as development minister, basically turned that decision around and decided to give the assistance to Rwanda, or half of the assistance that was cut. And this did send not the right message, and there were no indications that Rwanda had stopped backing the M23 rebellion, and to the contrary, it looked like the support was increasing. So that really did halt our efforts, because it was a signal to the Rwandan government that actually the donors don't care that much. It's okay. So it does matter what the U.S., the U.K., and other countries do in these contexts.
So staying on that theme of Western support, the United States, the act that was passed in 2010, what sort of an impact has the United States' own legislation had on potentially quelling some of this violence and laying a framework for accountability?
La loi de Obama de 2010,
the Obama law of 2010
était la bienvenue pour les populations de l'Afrique centrale.
Was very welcome for the Central African populations.
Mais ça a dû prendre du temps pour sa mise en œuvre sur le terrain.
But it's taking time to implement it on the ground, in the areas.
Ce n'est qu'à 2012 ici que l'administration Obama a envoyé des conseillers militaires.
It's only 2012 that the Obama administration has now begun sending out these military advisors.
Et sur le plan militaire, ça demande beaucoup d'études stratégiques.
And on the military level, it needs a lot of study as to what to do strategically, militarily.
Et de l'autre côté, il y a eu une autre développement.
And then there's been another development.
De la part de l'Union africaine qui a proposé d'autres stratégies.
On the part of the African Union, which has proposed other kinds of strategies.
Et cela exige maintenant une certaine collaboration.
And that requires a certain kind of collaboration.
Des stratégies américaines, de l'Union africaine et des autres armées qui existaient déjà dans la région.
The American strategy, the African Union strategy, and of all the other entities existing in the region.
Et il est très tôt pour nous maintenant d'apprécier.
And it's too early yet for us to be able to
la loi Obama, nous espérons que
to enjoy the results of the Obama law. We hope.
Et surtout avec la mobilisation des Américains, à pousser le Congrès américain
à
ne pas oublier cette question.
We hope that especially that everybody will continue to push the American Congress not to forget this question.
Et c'est un cri fort que je lance à tous mes frères américains.
It's a loud cry for help that I am really I'm pleading for help from all of my American brothers.
Afin que le Congrès ne puisse pas oublier.
So that the American Congress will not forget us.
Cette question sur l'agenda régional de l'Afrique centrale.
And will not forget about this and keep it on the agenda with respect to the Central Africa.
Parce que parfois ça peut arriver que le Congrès puisse être fatigué.
Because you know, Congress can get tired and.
Ce n'est pas facile.
And it's not easy.
De finir cette question de la LRA.
To bring to an end this whole question of the LRA.
Just to add to that, I think in addition to the military involvement, the U.S. government is also supporting on infrastructure development in the areas affected by the LRA and with humanitarian assistance. And one of the most important initiatives I think they're working on is setting up cell phone towers in the areas where the LRA operate, which will help communities communicate and let people know when there are attacks, and that it's taken a long time, but finally those towers are now being set up.
So can you speak a bit to private industry? There was one question here about the Dodd-Frank Act, which requires companies to disclose whether their supply chains have conflict minerals present. What is the role of private industry in this conflict? Is there one?
Yes, I would say, especially in the conflict in the Kivus, it's not just about control over minerals, but a lot of what drives the conflict and what keeps these armed groups going is control over mineral resources and how. What you have is armed group commanders and army commanders who control the mines themselves, and then they sell them, and eventually it gets to the big industries, and it's these rebel commanders and warlords who then profit. So the goal of this legislation is to have a tracing system in place, and that the big industries only buy minerals that have been tagged and that do not come from mines that are controlled by warlords. And I think that's an important goal, and I think, you know, we would support the Dodd-Frank initiative, but there's a lot more that needs to happen, you know, around that. And right now what we're seeing is it's still, you know, we still have a lot of minerals being smuggled into Rwanda, and then they get tagged as being Rwandan minerals, and it's still coming from the same place. And so, you know, that part of the chain isn't being dealt with yet.
So another question that's come up is wanting to know a bit more about how individuals start committing crimes against their own people. So, for example, the child soldiers who are recruited or other individuals who take up arms, aren't they committing crimes against the people in their communities and their own neighborhoods? And if so, what is the motivation for doing this?
Vous savez, les enfants, c'est une force de la couche sociale.
You know, with respect to children, it's a question of social conscience.
Et cette force peut servir de deux façons.
And it's a power that can be used one way or the other.
D'une façon positive comme négative.
It can be used either in a positive way or a negative way.
Et nos chefs de guerre.
And these warlords or heads of various rebel groups.
Même nos politiciens savent très bien cette réalité que.
And even our politicians, they know very well what this reality is.
La jeunesse, c'est une grande force.
And they know that youth is a great power.
Et pour pouvoir régner, il faut d'abord parvenir à détruire cette force.
So that particular kind of negative power has to be destroyed.
Ou à orienter vers cette force-là vers le mal.
And they can take that force of youth and they try to orient it or push it towards a dark side.
Et raison pour laquelle ils utilisent cette énergie-là de la jeunesse pour so they, leur propre intérêt.
So they try to use the energy of youth for their own nefarious ends.
Et par là, ils commettent des crimes énormes.
And they start committing the most atrocious of crimes.
Je ne sais pas, je pense que la motivation est purement et qu'ils sont vraiment c'est intéressé. Ils ont des intérêts politiques et militaires.
I just don't know. I mean, I think the only explanation can be that they have political or financial interests.
Yeah, and I think looking at the case of the LRA, when you have these children who are abducted, often the first thing that the LRA makes them do is kill members of their own family, kill their parents, kill their brothers and sisters, and they're brainwashed immediately and forced to commit these horrific crimes. And they're told, you know, if they try to escape, they will automatically be pulled back because of the power of Kony. And then when they come back, they'll be killed. And when kids do manage to escape and are captured, they are brought back and they use the other kids, have them, the other kids surround the person who tried to escape in a circle, and they take turns beating them to death with a heavy wooden stick until the kid dies. And it's just, you know, forcing them to commit these horrific acts and telling them about the spiritual powers of Kony and that they have no other choice but to do this, and telling them to view other people as animals, and, you know, all of this brainwashing that they do on the kids, you know, forces them to commit these acts. And then I think, you know, some of the groups in the Kivus, you have, you know, often they're drugged before they commit attacks. And in the Kivus, it's often, many times it's ethnically based, and you have the commanders who just tell the kids or the young fighters, you know, horrible things about the other ethnic group and how this is, you know, it's their calling to go out and destroy this other group, and then, you know, they might be drugs, they might not be, but they go out and do these attacks.
Thank you. So can you speak a bit to the efforts now to reintegrate these children, the women, the men that have been recruited? How concretely do you go about rehabilitating and reintegrating people when they have into a society when they've had such trauma forced upon them?
Il y a deux manières de
There are two ways to rehabilitate
et réintégration de ces enfants.
And to reintegrate these children.
On peut les maintenir dans leur propre communauté.
You can keep them in their own communities.
Et faire travailler sur leur donner le soutien psychosocial au sein de leur communauté.
And try to give them some kind of psychosocial support within their own areas or communities where they're living.
Et c'est plus compliqué parce que ils doivent avoir des assistants psychosociaux locaux qui soient
and
stables.
It's more complicated because they need to have some kind of psychosocial stability established.
Et dans notre pays, nous n'avons pas assez de gens formés pour ce genre de travail.
And we just don't have enough people who are trained in this way in our country.
Pour les un ou deux personnes que vous pouvez trouver et que vous pouvez former,
there might be one or two people that are trained or that you might find who have some kind of formation in this
vous
way.
Vous ne pouvez pas l'exposer à se promener dans des zones insécurisées comme ça partout dans la région.
And you can't just send them out into the region and put them in danger.
C'est pourquoi j'ai eu l'idée de la deuxième formule, de créer un centre de réhabilitation.
That's why I had another idea, which the second idea, which was to create my own center of rehabilitation.
Là où j'ai un certain nombre de psychologues.
Where I have a certain number of psychologists or socially trained individuals.
Et des assistants psychosociaux.
And psychosocial assistants.
J'ai toute une équipe qui sont formées à ce sens-là sur le plan médical.
I have a whole a team, basically, that have been trained, also medically, somewhat.
Et aussi des enseignants.
I have teachers.
Qui doivent orienter la formation professionnelle comme une thérapie.
And who try to orient and perform this training In such a way, d'une manière...
Professional training that also provides therapy.
That provides therapy to them. Thank you.
Okay, c'est en travaillant au niveau du centre autour de la femme.
So the, in the center, we work around the child.
Pendant que la femme est au centre, nous travaillons en même temps aussi sur leur communauté pour préparer leur communauté.
So while we're working
on
the child, we also go back to their own communities and work with the communities so that they will be reintegrated into the community.
Parce qu'il y a une différence. Les communautés dans lesquelles vivent ces enfants sont des communautés à perpétuel déplacement. Donc, ce sont des communautés traumatisées.
Yes, because of one of the problems is that the communities that the children come from, many of them are displaced, and therefore they are also traumatized.
Et vous devez travailler doublement, en même temps sur l'enfant et sur son environnement
social. You have to
work
doubly, both on the rehabilitation of the child and of the community itself.
So I'm imagining there would be tremendous resistance to this rehabilitation, reintegration, to removing individuals from these particular groups. Do you ever fear for your own safety when you're doing this work, whether it's rehabilitation or documentation of these egregious crimes?
Bon, auprès des enfants, je pense j'utilise le système référentiel.
As far as the children are concerned, I use a system of reference or referencing system.
C'est la famille qui manifeste la volonté dans la communauté.
So the family expresses their willingness to be involved with this as a community.
Oui, la communauté me réfère l'enfant.
Or the community refers the child to me.
Ça peut arriver qu'il y a d'autres organisations d'aide humanitaire qui travaillent aussi dans les groupes de la protection de l'enfance.
And there may be other assistance groups or international aid groups who are working to rehabilitate these children in these areas and in the communities.
Qui peuvent référer aussi cet enfant à moi.
Who may refer the children to me as well.
Donc du point de vue pour ce qui concerne la protection de l'enfance et pour ce qui concerne la réhabilitation, il y a moins de risques.
So that when that happens, and then the rehabilitation and reinsertion of the child presents less risk.
Les risques restent plus chez les éléments de la LRA parce qu'ils sont à Bruce et je ne sais pas où est-ce qu'ils sont.
The worst risks have to do with the participants or members of the LRA because, first of all, I don't know where they are.
Ils peuvent surgir partout et n'importe quand.
They can just appear anytime, anywhere.
Bon, le problème, je ne peux pas non plus travailler en dehors d'une région là où il faut travailler.
And so I'm not necessarily working outside of my own region, and you would need to go into those other regions, and I can't always go into those areas.
Et c'est une manière pour moi d'être solidaire avec mon peuple.
But it is a way for me to try to show solidarity with my own people.
Et s'il arrivait le pire, bon, je ne sais pas, bon, ça sera au moins pour un intérêt louable.
Un
intérêt qui serait quand même louable parce qu'il est humanitaire.
Even if something terrible should happen, at least it would be honorable and laudable because it is a humanitarian effort.
Je pense que pour ce genre de travail, il faut beaucoup de conviction.
I think to do this kind of work, you have to have a lot of conviction.
Et de confiance aussi auprès de ceux qui vous aident.
And you also have to have a lot of trust.
De ceux qui vous ont aidé.
Non, ceux qui vous aident.
Do you have to have a lot of trust in those that you are helping?
Parce que eux-mêmes aussi me protègent.
Because they are the ones who are also protecting me.
Comme ils savent que je les aime, je travaille pour eux.
Since they know that I love them and that I am working for them.
Ils veulent me protéger pour que je continue à les aider.
They want to protect me. They want to help me so that I can continue helping them.
Je pense que c'est ce qui diminue un peu les risques pour moi dans la région.
So I think that reduces the risk somewhat in the region.
Then in terms of documenting these abuses, yes, there are risks sometimes. And I think what's key is having good contacts. And then, you know, as Abbé Benoît said, when you go into a village, you need to make sure you have very good contacts with the local people in that village and people who understand what you're doing and support what you're doing and will alert you if there is something that we should be aware of. And also just, you know, having very good contacts, talking to the rebel commanders or the army leaders before you going into an area, making sure they know what you're doing. Being high profile can sometimes help you. But, you know, as I said earlier, I think my biggest fear is usually for our Congolese colleagues or the local human rights activists or people we speak to who could be, you know, in danger because they're connected to us.
We have a number of great questions remaining, but unfortunately we only have time for one more. So I'd like to close with this. What can individuals in the U.S. do to try to help support the work that both of you are doing going forward?
Le premier rapport, la première aide que nous pouvons attendre chez vous.
Well, the first help that we would ask from you,
c'est ce plaidoyer-là auprès des structures américaines de décision.
Is to advocate with your government, with your structures, your various authorities who could help.
Donc, il s'agit de faire pression sur le Congrès.
So please pressure the Congress.
L'administration Obama.
The Obama administration.
À poursuivre cette initiative qu'il a déjà prise.
So that
depuis
they
2010.
Continue to implement this initiative that they already have started in 2010.
Et qu'à la longue, qu'on puisse arrêter quand même avec cette question de Joseph Kony.
And so that we can finally bring an end to this whole question of Joseph Kony.
Et aussi du côté de MV3, qu'il puisse beaucoup peser.
And so as far as the M23, that
de son
group,
poids au Conseil de sécurité.
That they can bring their weight to bear to the Security Council regarding that.
Pour que les sanctions soient réelles et
so that the sanctions are real and weighty
contre le Rwanda qui soutient les M23
against
au Congo.
Those in Rwanda who are trying to back
et
these groups.
Pour ce genre, par exemple, du travail que je fais, je peux demander aussi l'aide financière.
And as far as my work is concerned, I can always use financial help.
Parce qu'il y a resté avec des enfants qui sont sortis de la brousse, qui doivent manger et ils doivent étudier.
Because think, these children have come out from the brush, from these rural areas, and they need to be fed and clothed.
Vous devez les soigner.
You have to take care of them.
Et vous devez payer le personnel.
And you have to pay the personnel that take care of them.
Vous sentez que pour un petit rien qu'on peut donner, pour aider un enfant qui peut représenter l'humanité un jour, c'est déjà grand chose.
It's already a wonderful, great thing to help, even in a small way, one of these children who really is a representative of all of humanity.
Parce que nous ne pouvons pas vous exiger de grandes choses.
We're not asking for all great things all the time.
Mais plutôt votre compassion à notre endroit et votre union avec nous dans cette souffrance.
But your compassion and your union with us in this suffering that we are going through.
I think Abbé Benoît has mostly summed it up, but just want to add that for a U.S. involvement in a place like Congo or with the Lord's Resistance Army doesn't necessarily pose, you know, any security risk to the U.S. government. There aren't a lot of financial interest at stake, so it's important for American constituents to show your congresspeople, show the Obama administration in Washington that these are issues that you care about and that you want the U.S. government to be acting on, to, as Abbé Benoît said, continue with the efforts against the LRA until Joseph Kony is captured, and to really put pressure in the right places to try to stop the M23 rebellion, bring Bosco and Ntaganda to justice. The U.S. government can make a huge difference in both of these areas, but they need to step it up, and they probably won't do it unless they think Americans care about it.
That concludes our program for this evening. On behalf of the World Affairs Council and Human Rights Watch, please join me in thanking Abbe Benoit Kinaligu and Ida Sawyer for their excellent talk and discussion.